And the devil and the jumped, devil up, jumped on upon a hickory stump
and said, boil him until you what?
I bet you didn't know, but I'm a fiddle player too. We can carry on. We can finish this.
And if you care to take a day, I'll make a bet with you.
Now you play, you play a pretty good fiddle, boy, and I'll give the devil his due. I'll give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul, because I think I'm better than you.
The boy said, my name's Johnny, and it might be a sin, but I'll take your bet. You're gonna regret, I'm the best as ever been.
Johnny, rise up your bow and play your fiddle hard, cause hell's broke loose in Georgia and the devil deals the cards. And if you win, you get this shiny fiddle made of gold, but if you lose, the devil gets your soul.
Hello again, squires. Welcome to Squirecast episode 7. My name is Matt. I will be your goblin guide for this evening. And joining me this week, as always, are my two lovely co-hosts. Callum, what's up with you? How's your week been?
My week has been tiring. We're getting into Christmas, so I've been working 6 days a week.
And, I hear that.
Yeah, having fun in my day off, talking about magic, waiting for 2 hours for you guys to come online.
I apologize for that. I was unconscious and completely dead to the world.
I was doing stuff.
Stephen, how's your week been?
All right, getting ready for next week. Getting pretty busy, working a whole bunch of night shifts. Mm. Yeah. Also, I went online and thought, yeah, I'm going to see what Mutavault is worth now because I don't really use mine anymore. Might sell it. Yep. Yeah. Fuck all. So I might keep it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happens when things go out of standard. There was a brief point of time there where you could have made a fair bit of money off your Mutavault, and sorry.
Oh, well, she'll be right.
Well, I mean, now we can pick them up for our decks, so that's cool.
I don't know what to do with it. I'm dismantling.
Mutavault just goes in, like, any deck. It's great.
It's like Khan.
Like, wait, like the Planeswalker?
Like the Planeswalker. Goes in any deck.
Maybe if you didn't want your curve that high, I wouldn't be interested in him. Like in a mono red burn deck, I feel like he'd be very low impact.
Yeah, I think if you're playing a low CMC deck, you're doing it wrong because that's not fun.
Hey,
that's right. Cool. I'm talking to you and your Goblin Perforos deck when I say that.
Oh shit, son! I love that deck.
Shots
high CMC is for busters.
Emrakul is for winners.
All right, guys. Sorry, Stephen, am I cutting you up there?
Niha! Shut.
Did you want to say anything, or were you just... Anyway, before we leap into the first segment of the show, which we're going to be talking about another weird card of the week again, apologize for last week going up so late. Last episode has taken a long time. We are recording episode 7 today. I have not even started editing episode 6 because I've had a hell of a lot on, and I actually had to grab it off Callum because my recording failed, so I haven't even done that yet. So, yeah.
Hey, who ding-da-doomed? I heard a ding-da-doom.
That was my phone. Ignore that.
Your phone ding-da-doomed. Ding-da-doom.
Ding-da-doom. Yeah, that's my
text. Stop being so popular, Matt.
All right, guys. Let's leap into Weird Card of the Week. What's going on? Stephen.
Let's start with yours this week. Oh, damn it.
You want to start with my one? Okay. All right.
Yeah.
We start with my one. Okay, cool. Today, I'm pulling a legendary creature from the time-shifted sheet. Ooh. Out of one of my favorite commander decks. And this is Vati Ildal. Now, Vati Ildal is a legendary creature, a human warrior from Tempest originally. But like I said, he was on the time-shifted sheet. So during Time Spiral, he was reprinted with a little bit of an updated card text and everything. And he is a 3/3 for 2 black-green. And you're like, oh, that's not too bad. It's pretty good. Pretty reasonable. And he has this really interesting ability where he taps to make target creature's power or toughness become 1 until end of turn. And this is an interesting effect because essentially what this means is that he sort of has death touch if he's blocking things. So something attacks into him, like with nothing else on the board, something attacks into him, he can block it, tap whilst he's blocking it to give that creature toughness of one, well, he's now going to kill it. Which is cool, but that's not the greatest use of it. I guess you could also use it defensively, where you can shrink these enormous attackers. It's just a very nice ability to have on the board, because it means that people getting into combat, they might have to rethink the possibility, like, okay, what happens here if my power all of a sudden shoots to one, you know? I'm gonna pump all this stuff into my creature to give it this massive power boost until end of turn, swing it at someone, and I go, it has one power.
Well, I mean, base power one. Yeah, it'll like giant growth in that.
It only changes the base power, but of course if you have, like, you know, this 15-15 or whatever, that you like, alright, I'm gonna give it trample and double strike until end of turn. And then you swing, and I now give it base power of one. Well, it's now a 1-1 trampling double striker or whatever.
Is that when you look him in the eyes and you say, yeah, I'll take it?
Or just the ability, you can team up with people and tap. That creature has one toughness, now someone can lightning bolt it. That kind of thing. Or you can tap, that thing now has one toughness, pyroclasm now wipes it out or whatever.
Or eye gouge.
Or eye gouge, ooh. Give it -1/-1. Aw, shit. Yeah, so this card goes in my Doran the Siege Tower deck. Because Doran makes all creatures deal combat damage with their toughness instead of their power. He's a weird card. We can maybe talk about him on the show, but what this essentially with Vati Ildal, I'm only really going to be tapping it to reduce the toughness. So essentially what that's going to mean is it's going to reduce their toughness to one and also the damage they'll be dealing to one, because they're only going to be dealing their toughness as damage. So yeah, this essentially taps to make creature a 1/1. This is like Turn to Frog on a green black card in the Doran deck.
That's pretty nice. Yeah.
It is, yeah,
and as you said, it's a nice effect, and it's not dependent on your commander to be a super functional card anyway. You can still tap it to reduce power or reduce toughness in any other situation as well.
It's a very versatile effect. It seems very low impact, but because essentially it doesn't do much on its own, it has to really sort of combine with a blocking situation or someone attacking or someone forgetting about it or removal spells or whatever. But yeah, it just it makes things very interesting. So
he can target himself.
He can target himself. I don't know why you would do that.
Well, aren't there cards that only work on? Like, there are cards that you can only equip to creatures with power one or less, right? And you know there are some weird things you can do.
Mm-hmm. What's the name of that card from Karns, the enchantment that's basically a Journey to Nowhere, but for toughness 3 and above?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, it's like one in a white.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You can dodge that.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. You know, something like destroy all creatures with power 3 or greater or something. If there was an effect like that, he can be like, oh, I'll just shrink myself.
So, kind of like Elspeth's Son's Champion, but for 3.
Yeah, something like that. Mm. I mean, he would, of course, naturally dodge it anyway, but whatever.
Yeah. You know what else this is good with, though?
What?
Engineered Plague.
Yeah, I guess
so. It turns it into a kill.
It'd be like tap to kill things, yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of interesting. Yeah, if you just had like an effect on the board, like there's a curse that does that, where you curse a player and all of their creatures get -1/-1. This essentially would like sort of tap to kill things, because you would tap to give them toughness of one and then they would just die.
Curse of Night's Hold, by the way, for anyone who's listening.
Yeah. I like that curse. It's pretty sweet. I was going to put it in my Zergo deck, but I felt that it was too targeted. I wanted to have more of my Zergo deck be punch the entire group all at once. All right, Steven, what's your card?
All right, mine's a crap card. Get ready for this. Strap yourselves in, because this is going to take a while to read. Okay, so this is Balduvian Shaman. It's a...
nice roboting on the name there.
Balduvian Shaman.
Balduvian Shaman.
It's a badass name, but when we're going to be getting into it, this is not a badass card.
No. So it's a cleric. It's a creature card. It's a human cleric shaman. from Ice Age. It's a 1/1 for a single blue. And it reads, tap. Change the text of target white enchantment you control that doesn't have cumulative upkeep by replacing all instances of one color word with another. That enchantment gains cumulative upkeep one colorless.
You've cut out like half the text on that card.
Well, yeah, because it's like all reminder text.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about reminder text. Though. No.
There's this big chunk of reminder text that says, for example, you may change black creatures can't attack to blue creatures can't attack. And it's...
I would love if someone read the card and thought that was the only thing that could happen.
Oh, really? Yeah, like, so it's even more limited. So yeah. It only targets white enchantments.
That you control as well.
That you control, and it only replaces instances of one color word with another. And then, unless that was too powerful an effect, it gives it cumulative upkeep 1, which says at the beginning of its control upkeep, that player puts an age counter on it, then sacrifices it unless he or she pays upkeep cost for each age counter on it. Which is a very, very, very draining effect.
I mean, it's basically sleight of mind for white enchantment. It's really bad.
And this is an effect that has, like, classically always been bad.
I mean, okay, so the question is, how can we use this? How can we use this? This is what the Weird Card Hospital is all about. Is this terminal, or can we do something? What I'm thinking is, maybe if you're going to do something really stupid, like, you know, in a Zedru the Greathearted deck with white enchantments, changing the color and then donating it to your opponents.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
maybe.
Okay, here's an interesting one. Okay, so there's an old card called Absolute Grace, which comes into play, and it says all creatures gain protection from black. So essentially what you can do is tap Balduvin Shaman to change Absolute Grace to protection from the color of whatever you want. And then all creatures on the battlefield gain protection from that color, so it would, like, turn off your opponent's auras and stuff, and mean that all of your creatures have protection from all of their creatures, if they're monocolored.
Okay.
That's not bad, but that's...
It requires a lot to set up.
I think it's really notable that those two cards are just bad on their own.
Yeah.
I mean, you could also use it with any of these Circle of Protections.
Yeah.
So you say put down red and then just change it to blue. If it's a monocolored deck, you don't need to be metagaming. You can just run one of the circles.
But then... In that situation, I would very much like to just very run Story Circle, which is its color protection for variable.
And the other thing,
story, I think Story Circle is like an inch. I think it's one white. Yeah. Sorry, I'm just looking it up. Go ahead, Stephen.
The thing is, right? Yeah, sure. You can run Balduvian Shaman and then any color of Circle of Protection. But why not run the correct colored Circle of Protection in your sideboard, and then you can remove Balduvian Shaman and actually run something that does something. You know, Balduvian Shaman is replacing something that could actually have a proper effect in your deck.
Yep.
That doesn't make any sense, though. Why would you take Balduvian Shaman out of your Balduvian Shaman deck?
Because it's a shit deck.
You gotta learn to think, Stephen.
and that's when you've completely changed the deck, but you still keep calling it the Balduvian Shaman deck, even though he features nowhere in it. And it's a better deck because of it.
Also, do you not typically name decks sort of after your win con? Balduvian Shaman's not a win con.
Or your big powerhouse or your main synergy or whatever.
Yeah.
I guess you could maybe have Balduvian Shaman as your main synergy, but... I mean, just the scope of white enchantments that specify one color, that you could get a bonus from changing that color to another color, is so limited. It's so limited.
Okay, what's interesting, in the Oracle text, the example they say is, for example, you may change black creatures can't attack to blue creatures can't attack. On the card itself, it says... For example, you may change counter black spells to counter blue spells. Are there any white enchantments that do that?
White enchantments?
I'm just... Look, it just... That's sort of like the reminder text, but it's not bracketed. So I think they may have fucked up there because, you know, you can't. Yeah, you so know,
maybe they gave like an example at the time that didn't exist, and they're like, oh, we'll probably make a card that says something like this, and then they just never made that card.
Yeah.
Yeah, the closest thing I can see is Orensen's Aura, which is a white enchantment that only counters other enchantment spells. It doesn't specify color.
There are no colors. This card is so bad. It's nothing.
Like, people weren't playing this card when it was trait doctoring in Dragon's Maze.
I mean, yeah, that's a recent example of this very similar effect.
It was a better effect.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, so I'm going to put this on a creature, and it's going to gain this ability cumulatively, and it doesn't specify white enchantments, and that's still a really, really bad card. That's a terrible card. Why would you play that card?
I don't know. These hack effects have typically been very weak, and they're just unappreciated and just generally not really good.
Well, because they're so limited in their scope. I mean, we look at something like Vati Ildal's effect, right, where he can tap to make something power or toughness 1. That's a very versatile, very scalable effect that changes its effectiveness in the board state, and you can build around. Balduvian Shaman is an effect that's so limited that you have to build around it, otherwise it does literally nothing.
Yeah. It's all good. Typically, hacks are used to, you know, just maybe escape from one of your opponent's color hoses, or, you know, provide, you know, like, hacks are typically used to give yourself a way out, or to maybe add to a strategy.
Yeah,
but Balduvian Hydra is so limited in its scope, because it's
Shaman.
Specifically Shaman.
Yeah.
Did I say Hydra?
Yeah, you said Hydra.
I mean Shaman, sorry, I was looking at Balduvian Hydra, actually. You know, the white enchantments, what do you suppose, you know, it's a blue card that targets white enchantments that you control. That's a very specific everything. It's bad. It's just, I don't want to talk about it anymore. Time of death, 2:56 PM. Let's move on.
Yeah. Interesting artwork, by the way. He's a weird artwork.
Yeah.
He's got, like, some skull, and he's making some magic happen, and he's leaning back very weirdly. Quentin Hoover has some weird artwork, man.
Yeah.
All right, Callum, what's your weird card for the week?
All right, my card is also illustrated by Quentin Hoover.
Ooh.
It's a single green 1/1 creature from Legends. It's called Aceling Leprechaun. And its printed text reads, because I find it funnier than the Oracle text, all creatures that block or are blocked by Leprechaun become green creatures. Use counters to indicate changed creatures. Cost to tap, maintain, or use a special ability of target creature remains entirely unchanged.
if we're talking about limited abilities. Yeah.
So basically, if you have combat with this, you become green for the rest of the game and every other game that you play with that card.
Oh.
This effect lasts indefinitely.
I feel like that stops when the game ends.
Yeah, that stops at the end of a game.
It doesn't specify that. It says indefinitely.
In the rulings, just below, the change to green does not end even if Leprechaun leaves the battlefield. Leprechaun protection from green, okay. Oh, shit, it doesn't actually specify. I was reading that wrong. It's just now green.
So say if you're playing this in a tournament, something becomes green, round one, game one, and in the finals it's still green.
You just call out to the thing. You're like, hey, by the way, this guy's whatever is now green. Like, this guy's, you know, I don't know, Ball Lightning or whatever is now green. So now you can use your protection from green spells against it.
Yeah.
I would love that. That's amazing.
However, you know what? I think there's interesting stuff you can do with Aceling Leprechaun.
Yeah?
Right? Okay, here's... Picture the scene. You have an Aceling Leprechaun on the battlefield.
Right.
Suddenly, you enchant it with Lure, which is, for one green and green, enchant creature, all creatures able to block enchanted creature do so. Okay?
Right, yeah.
So then you attack with Aceling Leprechaun. Your opponent has to block with all of their creatures. Now they're all green. And then you tap two and a black and you cast Nature's Ruin. Destroy all green creatures. Ha ha.
I mean, yeah. I mean, the you know, sort of hating on green things could be interesting.
Yeah.
And yeah, I guess if this was something that you wanted to build around, giving all creatures, like, they have to block this guy would probably be your best way to do that. He's gonna die. He's a 1-1, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. So, once again, you have to do stupid things to make it worthwhile.
Sometimes you gotta do something stupid to get results.
Yeah.
Mm. I feel like this could also be quite useful with something like Gaia's Cradle. If you have any mind control effects or acts of treason, you just bring all their green creatures over, then tap it for a whole bunch of mana.
But that, you see, that relies on you getting Azing Leprechaun, lure, attacking with Azing Leprechaun, getting them all blocked, and then act of treasoning or nicking. You know, it's just, there's a lot of stuff that needs to be done.
Yeah, oh, is that how banding works? Can I ban this with Taunting Elf?
Okay.
And then make everything block both of them?
Banding is a forbidden subject in this podcast.
It is. And if you want to tackle how banding works, Mark Rosewater did a really good podcast recently on banding. He went into the specifics of banding and basically talked about the one mechanic and a couple of side stories for like half an hour. So
Let me know about that when the show's over, because I will forget.
There's a lot to talk about with banding, especially because it works differently when you're attacking and when you're blocking, but we don't have enough time to get into that.
When we do a weird mechanic hospital, maybe we'll talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea. All right. Okay, guys. So, main topic for this week. This is going to be part of our... we're going to be doing a segment of these, like a little series of them. We're going to be talking about how to build, how to build on a base level particular kinds of decks. The big main four, I guess, is what you talk about. We're going to be talking about how you build a aggro deck, control deck, combo deck, and maybe going into what a mid-range deck entails. Of course, what the fuck is mid-range is going to be sort of the main topic for that one, I guess.
Yeah, Bossy is mid-range. I don't know what
this range is. it's notable that even something like Star City doesn't necessarily... Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, I find it funny that even Star City Games has trouble with this whole mid-range thing, where you'll look at like tournament results now, where there'll be 8 different decks that are clearly different, like very, very sort of diverse lists, but they'll all be called Abzan mid-range. You know, like it's sort of like this... lump sum idea where they just name them all that. If it's not aggro, yeah. And if it's not control, mid-range, go.
That Wikipedia actually lists what mid-range is, but I don't know if I agree with it.
Mm-hmm.
So it says, mid-range can be considered an archetype in its own right, but it is essentially a cross between ramp and aggro. A typical mid-range deck has an early game plan of mana ramp and control, but begins to play threats once it reaches 4-6 mana. Right.
I mean, I guess, but mid-range I feel like covers even more than that.
Yeah, exactly. Mid-range is a lot more general.
Anyway, what we're going to talk about this week is not so general. What we're talking about this week is aggro decks.
Aggro.
Which is, of course...
Aggro.
Yeah, which is, of course, short for aggressive. Now, this... This might be my favorite kind of deck. This is just sort of my deck strategy in general. Is the aggressive deck. What's the bottom line for the aggressive deck? It's to take your opponent from whatever their life total starts at to zero as quickly as possible. And that might seem simple, and sometimes the game plan can be a little bit simple, but it's easily, I would say, the most focused out of all the deck archetypes. Maybe combo would be up there as well, but it's the one out of the main four that we're going to talk about that has such a distinctly clear goal in mind. I am going to do this, and I'm going to do this really well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's less simple and more linear, I'd say.
Yeah. There's definitely
a lot of sequencing to have to go through to actually do the optimum play every time and get someone dead.
Right.
Because basically the optimum play each turn is, okay, what am I going to do? Kill? Kill. Sounds good.
Yeah, and like even if you're looking at something like, you know, the classical mono-red burn deck, sorry, and Yeah, any good aggro player becomes insulted by the idea of someone saying, like, you know, a control player being like, ugh, aggro decks are so simple. Like, it's just burn them in the face and win. There's a lot more to it than that. And when you have a lightning bolt, depending on what threats your opponent is putting out or whatever, the correct play might be to just direct it at their face so that you can try and just win on, like just try and time them out. Like, try and, okay, I can do this amount of damage over this amount of turns. I can devote this mana now to kill them. Or should I be killing the creature so that the next turn I can put more creatures through to their face? There's a lot of thinking and sequencing that goes into it.
Allegedly.
I would say so. As an aggro player.
I do remember playing against your Purphoros tokens, kill everything turn four.
Yeah.
It seemed like there wasn't much choice.
Yeah.
I'm going to play this card, and then this card, and now you're dead.
Yeah, I mean, that was a scenario where Purphoros is burning everybody for creatures entering the battlefield, and all I just had to do was play creatures. Like, I didn't even really have to attack. I would just, like, top deck, oh, hey, look, Hordling Outburst, boom, put three creatures onto the battlefield, everybody takes six. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's how that works. So, there are very, very linear, very, very, sort of, I don't know, hands-off, essentially, in a way, aggro decks that exist, but for the most part, what we're going to be talking about, decks that want to be aggressive, there's a lot to think about. When you're the guy posing the questions, not delivering the answers, you've really got to think about what you want to ask. Anyway, all the colors have their own kind of aggro deck. And, this might seem a bit weird, because easily, you know, red, you know, comes to mind as, like, the most aggressive, and you look at something like blue or something like that, and it doesn't necessarily seem like an aggro deck would exist there. But, you know, we've seen stuff like that before. Even just in the last standard, we had a mono-blue aggro list that popped up.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, with the Master of Waves and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there was, like, 12 or 14 one-drops in that deck. That sounds like an aggro deck to me.
I was just going to say, it really did define the format, because no one was expecting this mono-blue aggro to just come out of nowhere.
Yeah,
everyone was expecting it to be the control decks of old, and just came and trounced everything.
Yeah, and in mono-blue, you know, classically, there's Merfolk. Merfolk is an aggro deck. And Delver of Secrets. Delver of Secrets might be one of the most aggressive one drops that's been printed in years, you know? And it's a blue creature.
Yes, it's a 3-2 on turn 2 sometimes.
It's a 3-2 flyer on turn 2 a lot of the time.
Yeah, if you build your deck right, it's, you know, pretty much a 3-2 on turn 2 all the time.
Yeah, yeah. maybe Monastery Swift Spear is hitting into that group now, like, as, like, one of, like, the really, really aggressive one drops in that deck. You know, the 1-2 haste with prowess. That seems like that
pretty much replaced Goblin Guide completely.
Yeah, that seems like a card where you can just sort of drop it, and then you can go like lightning bolt, gutshot. That sounds sweet, right? You know,
yeah,
so happy.
Did you see any of the latest? Jeez, I can't remember. I think it was Players Championship.
Okay.
They're actually using, yeah, the World Championship.
The World Championship, yeah.
Yeah, where the Delver players were using Mutagenic Growth as a zero drop. All right, now like creatures just get
plus two.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, Mutagenic Growth plus two. Yeah, yeah, and then of course.
And then an additional prowess.
Yeah, an additional prowess. That's just insane. Like, I mean,
doing that on turn one.
Yeah. Monastery Swift Spear could go turn one, come down as a one drop, swing, mutagenic. Then you'd get four prowess triggers, and also +8/+8. So that's an additional 12 power, so you'd be hitting them for 13 on turn one.
Wow. Also, you turn into a robot with an explanation.
Yep. sorry, folks. Looks like our internet connection is looking
awful.
Great. Yeah. Welcome to Australia, folks.
As you would say in Australia, cack and it's dax.
It's cack and it's dax. Yeah. So, hey, Stephen, you're the other one out of this three that plays aggressive decks. What do you like about aggro decks?
Oh, you know, it's interesting building a deck to be as efficient as possible. You know, the mana curve of an aggro deck is typically very low, and a lot of things, something that a lot of people forget when building aggro is how much you need to exploit and work with tempo in order to win.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, and each color, as we spoke about in our removal episode, you know, removal is a part of tempo. You know, just getting rid of your opponent's resources just in time to smack in and deal some damage or do something.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you've got this careful, you know, in an aggro deck, especially a creature-focused aggro deck, you've got to have this careful balance of, you know, a little bit of removal, a little bit of, you know, maybe a few combat tricks, and really mana-efficient creatures.
Mm, yeah.
So it's good. It is difficult to build, I will say. It is surprisingly difficult to build a decent aggro deck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one that, there's this interesting sort of, like, dilemma that sometimes an aggro deck will face, where you want to maybe fill your deck with a lot of really low-drop creatures so that you have this consistency that you're always going to come out of the gate very quickly. But that does mean that if you falter a little bit, you know, maybe if, like, your turns 2 and 3 and 4 don't quite go as well as you wanted, you know that your deck is only full of really low-drop creatures, which become progressively worse as the game goes on. So you maybe want to put in some more heavy hitters to facilitate something like that, but then you don't want too many, because otherwise you don't want to have them in like your opening hand or whatever.
Yeah. So like getting out of the gate decently is really important in aggro, but you need something to finish off with just in case.
Yeah, yeah. Just like a control deck needs a finisher, aggro deck needs a sort of fallback plan, I guess you could call it. Like a mono red burn list. There's creatures and stuff in there, and the creatures sort of provide a large chunk of the burn. But you can always just fall back on your lightning bolts to just top deck it, hit them in the face. Top deck it, hit them in the face, kind of thing. Like there's a fallback plan. So, if we're talking fundamentals, right? Fundamental building blocks of an aggro deck. You were bringing up a really good one, creature. You were bringing up a really good one, Steven. Is mana efficient creatures, right?
Yeah.
So, okay. So, what do we mean by that? Yeah, Steven, what are you thinking?
Well, when we talk mana efficient creatures, we're talking creatures that get you a lot for a little bit. And the first thing that comes to mind, like for me, one of the best aggro cards out there is a red creature printed in Return to Ravnica called Ash the Zealot.
Oh, yeah.
It's a 2-2 for 2. That's not bad, okay? It's a bear. But it's got first strike, it's got haste, and if your opponent casts a spell from the graveyard, Ash the Zealot burns them for 3.
Mm-hmm.
So not only is it a 2-2 first striker with haste, that's awesome. I'd pay 2 for that as well. But you've got an additional effect as well, just in case your opponent's running a particular strategy.
Right. Right. Yeah. So what you're talking about there is it's 2 mana for 2 power, which is pretty reasonable, plus like sort of 3 additional upsides, I guess you could call it.
Yeah.
It's got first strike and it's got haste, and then it also has this additional rider.
Yeah.
Oh god, the internet's just cacking its dacks right now.
I'm glad that's caught on. But you know, the usual yardstick for creature effectiveness is probably Grey Ogre, and I'm sure you've heard this quite a lot as well, yeah?
I mean, really?
No, but I mean, you sort of compare cards to Grey Ogre and go, you know, you sort of get an estimate of how...
Oh, okay. Yeah, So we're talking like basement level sort of thing.
Yeah, like a 2-2 for 3.
Right.
Is, you know, is okay.
It's like, possible.
You know, so now you've got, if you compare Ash Zealot to Grey Ogre, suddenly you're seeing, well, it's 1 mana cheaper, yeah, and you get 3 upsides. Yes, it's a bit more mana intensive, you need 2 red instead of, you know,
mm-hmm,
one red and 2 colors, but you know, so you
comparing it to Grey Ogre, you go, oh, wow, this is actually, you know, it's quite good.
Yeah.
First Strike is fantastic. Haste is fantastic. You can get right out there, smack face, you know. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very easy to think with aggro creatures as kind of cards that have, like, numbers on them. Like, just sort of, like, as... That's sort of maybe all you can see the card as. So when you look at something like... I don't know, say Carnophage, right? It's a 2-2 for a single black, which is really efficient. If we're talking, you know, comparing it to Grey Ogre or whatever, that's 2 mana cheaper for the same power and toughness. That has this effect that says, at the beginning of your upkeep, tap Carnophage unless you have Carnophage deal 1 damage to you. So it's basically saying it's going to hit you for 1 every turn... Otherwise, it's going to stay tapped. And you can look at this card and imagine that you're paying 1 mana to probably attack for 2 on turn 2, and then maybe you attack again after that, and then maybe you attack again after that, and then it loses its effectiveness. So you've probably dealt 6 damage for 1 mana, which is very efficient. Or you look at other more recent, like, black one-drops like that fit into that sort of thing, like Bloodsoaked Champion, who's a 2-1 that can't block for a single black, but has 1 and a black to return to the battlefield if you attack with a creature this turn. This is a guy that can sort of keep coming back and finding the opportunities to hit in where he can. So you could be paying a single black to, yeah, maybe get in 3-4 attacks over the course of this one card's lifetime.
Yeah.
Yeah,
would you classify Master of the Feast as an aggro card?
I absolutely would.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah because he's... I mean, like, if we're talking, like, efficiency, we generally talk, like, big power and toughness... Or generally big power, I guess, for its mana costs, right? And Master of the Feast is a 5-5 flyer for 3. That's... Like, that's efficient. There's efficient, and then there's Master of the Feast, right?
Yeah.
I was just thinking, because unless there's very extreme circumstances, you're not going to get that out turn 1 or 2.
No.
So,
well, I mean, you could Dark Ritual, Master of the Feast. That'd be interesting.
I said extreme, not impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is, if you're running a mono deck, the downside of Master of the Feast isn't really a downside anyway. Because you've been playing it on turn 3, you've probably played a 1-drop and a 2-drop the 2 turns prior, and you started smacking face with them already. And now you've got a 5-5 flyer out. The game's going to be over pretty quickly.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, like, Master of the Feast, as a lot of these extremely efficient cards have, is a downside, where, you know, beginning of your upkeep, your opponents are drawing a card. So the longer he... like, so this is a card that is... He's screaming at you, attack with me, kill your opponent quickly, because the longer I'm on the battlefield, the more advantage you're giving your opponent. So, I mean, we look at something like Goblin Guide as well, as another, he's a 2-2 for 1 with haste. Very efficient, you know, for a long time, an extremely powerful aggro creature, but he has this kind of additional upside... for your opponent kind of thing, like a constellation where whenever he hits a player, they reveal the top card of their library. If it's a land, it goes in their hand.
Yeah,
so that's sort of like it's a downside in a way for the creature. I mean, it's arguable. I mean, you get to see your opponent's next card, so that's cool. But you might be essentially saying 2 mana, hit you, and then my opponent draws a card.
Yeah.
So yeah, you find that a lot on these efficient creatures, that they come down and they might be hitting for a lot of damage, but generally at a side effect, whether that's hitting you for damage, giving your opponent card advantage, or something else, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe you have to sack a creature every turn or something.
Basically, aggro decks typically don't care about its own situation. It basically focuses on the opponent's life total and getting that down as fast as possible. Your own life total, your hand size, that typically doesn't matter as much.
Yeah.
It's about
getting
stuff out and fucking them.
Right.
In the eyes.
If we're looking for epitomes of the aggro strategy, I don't think we can look any further than Zergo Helmsmasher as like a current example. Zergo is in the best 3 aggro colors in the game, red, white, and black. Three colors with very sort of small creature aggressive strategies, in different ways. And he's a 7-2 for 5 with haste. And of course the very useful effect that he's indestructible as long as it's your turn. So this is a card that he's going to come down, and it's only caring about, like, that okay, I'm getting in an attack. That's going to happen. I'm going to attack for 7. He's indestructible, so he's probably not going anywhere this turn. Maybe next turn you'll very easily kill him, but at the very least, I'm swinging for 7 right now.
Yeah.
And that's sort of aggro deck right there. I'm hitting for a very efficient amount of damage right now. There's obviously a clear downside that it might die next turn, or whatever. But he's gonna punch, and he's gonna punch hard. Yeah.
Right, Tim has left the call for a second.
One sec.
Yep. Yeah. So a massive building block, I guess, of aggro decks is this efficient creature. Putting a little mana in now and getting a lot of benefit out of it.
Yeah.
If sort of comparing it to other really good examples for this, Arcbound Ravager comes across to me as a extremely efficient creature for the mana. Just think about how big he can become and how much damage he can do over the course of a game.
And plus he can, because he's got the modular ability.
Yeah,
he can attack him without fear, knowing that his power is going to something else afterwards.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's efficiency right there. Is the ability to sort of have this one body that's carrying the power and attacking, but knowing that efficiency is going to carry through onto something else that you can attack with next turn.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's also really potent.
Leads to cool situations where you're attacking with two artifact creatures. If Arcbound Ravager gets blocked, you sacrifice it, and now going through.
Yeah, sacrifice him to himself, and then just move it across. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cool. The efficient creatures are, I would say, probably one of the major pinnacles of an aggressive deck. Hey, welcome back, Steven.
Damn it, how is it so noticeable that I'm back?
Because you're the only one with background noise.
Fucking damn it. All right, sorry, just had to answer a call.
No, no, that's all right. Yeah.
I think Matt was just trying to relate to me in some way because he knows I don't play aggro. Oh, he's like, yeah. Hey, here's a creature you play.
Yeah.
So
what I'm also thinking for efficiency, it's not necessarily just power and toughness-wise for the mana, but also how potent the ability is. Look at something like Glistener Elf, right? The 1/1 infect drop. That's efficient right there, where you can be beginning your infect. Like, if infect is your strategy, where you want to be giving them 10 poison counters and killing them quickly, you want to be starting that as quickly as possible in the infect, like modern and legacy decks and whatever. So being able to put You've seen it what, Steven?
Sorry, I have actually seen a turn 2 kill with that.
Yes, I have.
That's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous card.
It's phenomenal, and it's amazing to watch. It just makes me so happy inside to watch that. But because it's great, because when you kill your opponent turn 2, you can have lots of games. You can be like, hey, do you want to sit down and play a game of Magic? And you go, do-do-do-do-do. Oh, shit, you're dead. All right, cool. Let's play again. Oh, you're dead again. Yeah, let's play it again.
Isn't this fun?
Well, you can play, like, maybe two games or whatever. And then you switch decks, because then your opponent's just kind of looking at you like, what the fuck are you doing, mate?
Or looking at their hands going, I've lost twice. What have I done?
I didn't even get to play anything. But,
Hearkening back to your goblin tokens, where I just couldn't do anything.
Yeah, I mean,
my deck literally couldn't function against yours.
It was like, can you deal with this indestructible enchantment, Purphoros? No. Okay, cool.
No.
and that's sometimes how an aggro deck can play out. Something like the on the unfair scale of aggro decks is, can you deal with my thing? No. Okay, you die. Can you deal with my Glistener Elf on turn 1 or 2? Oh, no? Okay, you die. Can you deal with my Monastery Swift Spear, or my Devil of Secrets, or my, I don't know, Ball Lightning? Ball Lightning's probably not going to kill you, but something like something like that. You know, that it's here's a threat. Go. Do you have an answer? No, I don't have an answer right now. So, and like,
bitch.
Yeah. I play aggro decks a lot of the time, but I tend not to go the eggs all in one basket kind of aggro deck. My aggro decks are punch you, punch you, punch you, punch you, punch you. All right, now you're dead. You know, my madness deck, there are 4/4 tramplers in there and 6/6s without trample. They're not going to kill you in one shot. They're reasonable creatures. You can kill them. You know, that's a thing. My preferred tokens deck. That's probably on the more on the unfair side of that scale, but Purphoros is a one of in that deck. He's just kind of in there as like a late term win advantage, and unfortunately, I just happened to get him out in turn 4, I guess.
It's still aggro. It's still burning as fast as possible with cheap efficient creatures, and you know, it's good.
Yep.
But we can't discount token generators.
You're welcome, Matt.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were unlistenable right there. I just could not hear anything you were saying.
All right, we'll try that again.
Yep.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Let's not forget tokens as well. Tokens are extremely mana efficient, and there are cards that can generate multiple, if not more than multiple, tokens at once. You know.
It can be it can be very powerful. Even something like Hordling Outburst, which essentially makes 3 power and toughness for 3 mana. But it's split over 3 bodies, so that can be really quite efficient there, because you can swing, and if your opponent has one blocker, if you had a 3-3, they would just be able to chump block your 3-3 blocker, but with the 3 little tokens, well, 2 of them are going to get through. That's efficient.
Yeah.
Mm. You can,
plus
like,
that yeah. helps with something like Foundry Street Denizen.
Yep.
Where it's suddenly a 4-1 for 3 mana.
Right, yeah. And something like Goblin Rabble Master is another good example of that. You know, who gets +1/+0 for each other attacking goblin. Yeah, it's
rabble.
Yeah. So
wait,
what?
Oh no, just check. We're busy talking about, you know, your aggressive deck, and I thought I'd pull up my Markov and the Worm Coils deck. Only to find that it was listed as not Legacy legal, but then I saw that it was Sauron Solemn Visitor and everything was okay.
Oh, yeah, because the Khan stuff is not... Yeah. The Khan stuff is not in there, yeah. That's one of the main pinnacles right there, is creatures that you're getting a lot of effectiveness out of over the course of the game. Whether that's big power, whether that's hitting immediately, whether that's starting your strategy off with a bang, or whether that's just spreading all of your aggressive power over multiple bodies. You know, if you're playing a Beetleback Chief and you're getting a 2/2 for 4, and you're also getting 2 1/1s, you're making a very efficient play for your mana. Or you're paying 1 mana for your Greater Gargadon, and you're suspending him for 10 turns. And if you can somehow, you know, like, you can sort of be playing your strategy as you would, and then whenever he does, he comes in and hits for 9. Well, you've paid 1 to do 9 damage. Little investment now, big investment later. Which for an aggro deck, later might be turn 6. So, I would say the other major pinnacle of an aggro deck, I'd say there's probably the 3-3 pinnacles, and the second big one would be, like you were hitting on this before, Steven, is like tempo, sort of ways to deal with, not necessarily always ways to deal with threats, but ways to get around what your opponent is doing. Because most of the time, you can't completely ignore what your opponent is doing and just hit them, most of the time. You need to find a way to... Your opponent's going to put down defenses. They're going to try and kill your things. They're going to do what their deck is going to do. And your deck needs to do what it needs to do. So you need to find a way to deal with that. So whether that's killing your opponents, killing your opponent's creatures and getting them out of the way, or aggressively attacking their hand so they don't have things to kill you with, or protecting your creatures so that they can get through, or having, you know, very, very resilient effects on the board that your opponent doesn't have a way to deal with, that kind of thing. Yeah, so I guess removal is the one that stands out of those as something that a lot of aggro decks need.
Because creatures don't... Oops. Go ahead, Sim.
Meow, papa.
Go ahead.
That's it, I'm done.
Alright, so is this like the burn spells we were talking about, the lightning bolts, the strikes, mm-hmm. all these things to keep, that can keep monsters off, as well as, in a pinch, do the last bits of damage?
Right, yeah, you know, when you're two power creature, like your 2/2 is staring down another 2/2, if you're just gonna, like, ram into that creature and they're both gonna die, your creature hasn't done any damage to your opponent, and for your mana investment, you haven't actually taken them down at all. So, if you can then kill that creature, then swing in for damage, well, now you're doing your game plan. That's great. Awesome.
Yeah. And now your opponent's monster hasn't done anything. It's not fulfilling the expectations put upon it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, remove...
So, would you include... would you include hand attack in aggro, then? Say, put down a Bloodsuck Champion turn 1, turn 2, Despise, or Inquisition of Kozilek.
Yeah. In my mono-black standard deck at the moment, one of my favorite sort of opening turns is Despise you turn 1. I get to look at your entire opening hand. I know where my deck is now going to go. I go, probably take out their Sylvan Carotid or whatever, or... yeah, something like that. Take out one of their early creatures, like a Cursor of Crucifix, which is going to gain them life, right? That's something I want to get out of the way. And then turn 2 1-drops. You know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, being able to...
Cursor of Crucifix.
Always believe in your soul, you're indestructible. Always believe in...
You were saying about Cursor of Crucifix, Cal?
Yeah, I was just saying, it also has an enormous arse, so yes. It's difficult for your low-drop creatures to get past it.
And 2 power as well. Like, it's going to get in the way. It's not going to even feel the hit, and it's going to kill my creature. Yeah. So finding ways to... if I'm despising someone, or him to Turok-ing them, or something like that, you know? Or if it's something... if I really, really know their deck, it's like some sort of eternal... format, maybe I'll use one of those lobotomize effects or whatever, where you sort of look at their hand and steal a thing and then steal all copies of that thing from their deck. That kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be proactively dealing with things. You can reactively, you know, kill creatures as they come on the board, but it's something, if you're, like, attacking your opponent's hand and something like that to get in your aggro before they have a chance to put it down, that's sometimes even you're next leveling it, you know.
And oftentimes it's cheaper as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, yeah, so like, if I,
because you don't want to spend the 3 mana on... go ahead.
Yeah. No, go ahead. I wasn't gonna say anything.
No, I was just gonna say, if you spend 1 mana on Despise or Duress or something, you're not spending the 3 mana on Hero's Downfall. It means you can get down 2 more, 2 power creatures and attack them even further.
Right, yeah, and, you know, end of the day, what have I done here? I've played a card, and I've taken their creature, which was going to get in my way, and I've put it in their graveyard. You know, it's the same kind of effect, I've just done it before it hit the battlefield. And if it's something like a Sylvan Carotid, which has Hexproof, that becomes even harder to do once it even hits the battlefield. You know, a 0/3 with Hexproof is like, man, what do I do? You know, I can attack into it, and then the block. And then maybe my other aggressive creatures get through. And I can't just, like, Hero's Downfall it, or Murderous Cut it, or whatever, you know? So these tempo... ideas, you know, even something like Mana War, you know, when it enters the battlefield, you bounce a creature. If you've got something else that you want to be attacking through, the Mana War comes down, it bounces the creature back to their hand, then you attack in. And then maybe next turn they play down that same creature because they've had to cast it again. And then you're like Mana War, and then you bounce it back again, and then you attack in. You know, you're aggressively sort of countering their threats in a way, whilst also putting down 2/2s onto the board.
Because that's how it's done.
That's how it's done. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I know what card you're talking about now.
What? Mana War.
Because what I heard was Mana War, like a conflict involving mana, like Magic the Gathering. But okay. No, it's the Portuguese Mana O War.
Yeah. Who I I was very disappointed to order from CardKingdom.com, and when I was ordering, they didn't actually have any copies of Mana War when I was looking for it. That's unfortunate, but I have since found a better Mana War artwork for the cube. It's the one from Portal, because it's a giant jellyfish killing a shark. So, yeah. That's cool.
Take the fate, shark.
Mana War! I think Mana I was looking... Yeah. Alright. So, yeah, if we're talking, you know, like, straight up pinnacles of an aggro deck, we're talking efficient creatures, we're talking ways to deal with your opponent's threats, and what's the other one? What's the other major component to a good aggressive deck? Well, I would say it's a fallback strategy. It's...
I was going to say lands.
Lands are also good. Ways to cast your spells.
Yeah. I mean, carefully balancing your land as well, because in an aggro deck, you don't want to keep drawing into lands.
Yeah.
So aggro decks typically have fewer lands than most decks, because if you draw two lands in your opening hand, you should be okay.
Yep. Depending on how low your CMC is, yeah.
Yeah. So, Matt, let's talk about one of your decks and your fallback strategy then, and I'll tell you about mine.
Okay, sure. Which one would you want to talk about? Yep.
Just give an example. Okay. Well,
Yeah, which one did you have in mind?
No, I was just going to talk about Markov and the Worm Coils.
Okay. I mean, right. Okay. Yeah, so there's like a delay, so we keep talking over each other.
You go first, Matt.
Okay. Because I don't talk enough on this show. I guess if we're talking decks with a fallback strategy, I don't know, I guess my green-red madness deck is probably my most noticeable deck with a fallback strategy. Mongrel Madness, of course, is a very, very aggressive thing. But fallback strategy, it's my Firewing Phoenixes, you know? Or I guess even technically something like my Fiery Temper, you know? So Fiery Temper being the burn spell that I can put to my opponent's face. It's a lightning bolt, essentially. And Firewing Phoenix is a 4/2 flyer that can keep coming back. So these are ways in which my deck can do something even when I've completely exhausted all of my cards on the battlefield, and maybe I've exhausted all of my utility in my graveyard. They can just sort of keep doing a thing. All you need to do is just take out that when your opponent's on 2 life and you've run out of steam. That's the worst feeling in the world, you know? You're on 2 life! I've already done 18! Yeah.
Yeah.
So something that can help you close out a game is really quite important. Whether that's something that just, like, ends the game on the spot, or, you know, just a threat that can keep coming back, that's really, really important.
Well, I mean, that's pretty much what I'm doing with my vampires deck. So we haven't discussed this on air before, but I've got this white black sort of tempo aggro kind of tribal vampires deck.
Yeah.
And I run a lot of vampires, and they're all very cheap. But I also run 2 copies of Wormcoil Engine. So the idea is to get it out early, but in the mid to late game, if I've exhausted myself, I put Wormcoil Engine out. Suddenly, it's a huge threat. Everyone starts targeting it. That gives me the perfect opportunity to keep pumping out 1 and 2 drops while people try and deal with the 6/6. So even if it's not, you know, so it is typically a game ender in itself,
but it's also a nice distraction if you're trying to make up, you know, field advantage.
And
so, you know,
yeah, I also see in your deck you've got two planeswalkers, right? And planeswalkers are fantastic sources of continuing pressure, generally, especially something like Sorin, Lord of Innistrad, who can keep popping out just little 1/1s, you know. If it just comes to a board stall and you can just keep doing it, eventually you can just overrun your opponent.
Yeah.
And Sorin's Solemn Visitor can make 2/2 flyers. Albeit like every other turn, but still.
It's still good. Yeah. But then the other thing to see with the
plus he's got the lifelink.
But the other thing to see with the Wormcoils deck, I will put the link up in the show notes, but there's also a lot of tempo in this deck. I mean, I've got six cards here that are creature removal. And I've got, you know, 2 Oblivion Rings in there as well. And that's sort of, you know, you start attacking with all your little 1-drops and 2-drops and destroy your opponent's creatures while you're doing that.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah. There's a lot of stuff to break. I mean, there's Oblivion Ring. There's Phyrexian Arena to help me keep card advantage. It's nothing worse than running out of steam as well. So, you know, it's important to consider all these things in building an aggro deck.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, Gatekeeper Malakir is also another way that you sort of, like, not selectively deal with threats, but still, target player sacrifices a creature is still going to deal something.
Yeah.
And I mean, if we're talking like sort of fallback strategies that you need to go, oh crap, I'm immediately on the back foot. High Priest of Penance can work defense very, very well.
And more often than not, there's always a Lingering Souls in my graveyard as well, and yep. That's nice.
Yeah, just be on the I'll just get 2/1/1 flyers. It's all good.
Yeah.
So like, so this is a good example of what I'm talking about. This is if we're talking very efficient creatures, Vampire Lacerator is a 2/2 for 1 that's going to deal you a fair bit of damage. Vampire Nighthawk. 2/3 flying Death Touch lifelink. That's really efficient. The fact that it's going to most likely hit for 2 next turn. If a creature got in the way, it's going to kill the creature, and you're going to gain 2 life. That's very, 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 very good. Wormcoil Engine, very, very efficient creature. Death Touch and lifelink. When it dies, you get a 3/3 Death Touch and a 3/3 lifelink. And, you know, something like Bloodgust, you know? Just something that keeps coming back. So you've got the efficient creatures that I was talking about.
Well, what I like in particular is that there seems to be this sub theme in the Zendikar block with vampires to be better, to reward you for an aggressive strategy.
Oh yeah, and that wasn't a sub theme. That was like their thing. That was their like mechanic. Yeah.
I was going to include more of them in this deck, but they're not. Most of them aren't great.
Right, and they're best sort of like late game, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, they all get a bonus when your opponent has 10 or less life.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Well, I mean, that's all I can say about this deck, really.
So if we're talking like the three pinnacles or whatever of a good aggro deck, efficient creatures, ways to deal with threats, and end game or like let's finish this out kind of stuff, you've got a lot of that in here, and you've got it like very like actually fairly neatly sort of allocated into those things. Efficient creatures is essentially almost all of your creature list, all of your instants save for like Dark Rituals, which just help you get aggressive quicker, are dealing with threats, you know, your Oblivion Rings dealing with threats, and your Planeswalkers are your late game sort of like continuing thing. Or your Bloodline Keeper that keeps making 2/2 flyers, or your Bloodgust that keeps coming back. You know,
I love this deck. It's my baby. This deck, like you have your Mongrel Madness deck.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good. It's good. So what about you, Callum?
I don't play aggro.
Yeah, well,
I've never built an aggro deck,
and I think that's actually quite good because you can give us like the opinion of playing against them kind of thing as the opposite side of the fence.
I can say that with yours, Matt, that you're very good at not running out of resources, like holding stuff back when you need to.
Yeah.
Like, even if it goes against the state aggro strategy of all in, I'll kill you, even if I take a bit of damage, you're very good at thinking, oh no, he's going to board wipe me, I need to leave something back and kill him next turn.
Mm-hmm.
Like, with a lot of aggro strategies I've played against online, they try to stick everything out there on turn 3 or 4,
right,
and then end hostilities, everything's dead, they have 2 cards in hand or something.
Yeah, an aggro deck can very easily get blown out by overextending and, like, putting too many threats on the board. And like, if we're talking, you know, efficiency and, like, you know, what your creatures are doing, you need to recognize what you can be doing and, like, not anymore. You know, like, recognizing what I have on the board is good enough. I don't need to put anything more down, because if I do, then I'm running into this scenario where I might just have it all wiped away.
Yeah. I think that's why aggro is a lot harder to build than people give it credit for, is because their entire field of vision is the field. They have to play to the field. And yet every other, I don't want to say archetype, but every other way of building, they mostly play to the hand. And it's a whole other dimension that aggro just can't deal with for the most part.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And of course,
so they have to go against this entire thing.
Yeah, and if you're devoting so much of your deck to doing a particular kind of thing, like an aggro, when you're devoting so much of your deck to attacking, you can't really have other slots that say, you know, do other things with your opponent. Like, you know, you countering spells and wiping the board, or, you know, being able to see your opponent's hand, or that kind of stuff, you know. You can't really devote a lot of spaces in your deck to that kind of thing, so you leave yourself open to some kind of things. You're kind of vulnerable by what you can't naturally put in your deck. Sideboarding often helps an aggro deck a hell of a lot.
Yeah, because then they kind of drift away from the aggro plan to, okay, how do I manage this particular deck I'm up against now?
Right, yeah. You know, the particular kinds of decks you might be facing require different aggressive strategies. Whether it's, okay, well, this deck has a lot of targeted removal, so if I put out a lot of threats onto the board very quickly, sort of the opposite of what we were talking about before, then that's the right play here. You know, because I know they can only deal with a couple of things, so if I keep putting out lots of things, well, then that's great. Or, you know, I'll side into my resilient threats and work around that, or I'll take out some of my threats and move into a burn deck or whatever. That kind of shit. Yeah.
Yeah, so they need to adjust a lot more.
Right.
Yeah.
What's it like? So playing against an aggro deck, what would you recommend? What do you find the best ways to kind of deal with something that's being aggressive is?
Both of us,
I think,
just
the best way is... Oh, no. If you have something to say, Stephen, go ahead.
You go first, my friend.
Man.
All right.
Too polite for our own good.
It's basically... The basic thing as a control player that I think is you can't get too rushed or panicked that these creatures are going down. You take it slowly, one at a time. Even if you're just answering one for one, you've probably got more gas in your hand than...
You got gas in your hand.
Just run that by again, Callum. I didn't hear a single word of it.
Alrighty. Basically, you can't get... I've forgotten what I said. Stephen, help me out.
Don't panic. That's what you were saying.
Thank you, Stephen. So don't panic. Just take it one creature at a time. Even if they're flooding the field and you only have targeted removal, you can't try to do everything at once. You're the control player. You're going to have more creature removal coming in the future. You can't just empty your hand in this thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And against an aggressive deck, your life total has become, your life total becomes more important against an aggro deck as well, because suddenly your life total is a ticking clock. It's a threshold that you need to be constantly aware of while you're carefully managing your resources against your opponent as well.
Yeah.
But I mean, by that logic, your life is even more of a resource, because you can look and think, all right, I've got 10 life left. He's attacking for 4. Yeah, I can just take this. I can do something next turn.
Yeah, but that's exactly what I mean.
Yeah.
And you can't think, oh no, I'm getting blown out. I got to do something.
Yeah.
You need to sort of recognize, I guess, as the opposite side, that until they take you to zero, you still have an opportunity to do something.
Yeah. As long as you have one life, you haven't lost the game yet.
Yeah. And I guess it's. I was just thinking then that, like, what's the worst case scenario for like a for an aggro deck playing against someone? And I'm thinking like, we're going to talk about it later, but like mid range decks are really good at like feeding on aggro decks, right? Because a mid range deck, we're going to be talking about it in a later episode, but they're all about again sort of efficient creatures, but ones that come down maybe turn 3, turn 4, and just like lock the board down. And that generally means that, you know, weenies or little small efficient creatures or stuff like that that an aggro deck might be playing, well, that's hard to deal with. You know, a Cursor of Krufix that comes down and, you know, it's a 2/4 and it's gaining them life, or an Obstinate Baloth, again another one,
yeah.
a 4/4 that comes down and gains them 4 life, or a Rampaging Baloth. I'm just listing off green creatures here. Whenever they play a land,
Thragtusk.
Yeah, Thragtusk, right? It's just things that come down and have like an immediate effect on the board, generally life, and can sort of stick around a bit. Are hard for an aggro deck to deal with, or planeswalkers. You know, if the aggro deck can't kill a planeswalker, an Elspeth can just be popping out all of the chump blockers every turn.
There seems to be a bit of rock, paper, scissors going on with deck types, because although there are more deck types than just the three or sort of four we're going to be discussing in the next couple of weeks, typically aggro, control usually has an advantage over aggro. Aggro has an advantage over combo, and combo has an advantage over control, right? Typically speaking, I mean, this is just sort of like a broad generalization. It's mainly talking about old school Magic, because newer Magic the Gathering sort of, they're trying to get away from this a little bit. But, you know, if we're talking control, we're talking about cards like Crawl Space, which stops multiple creatures from attacking. We're talking about Propaganda, where the opponent with the aggro deck has to pay mana to attack. You know, so there are, and Sphere of Safety, cards like that. So, you know, one of the best ways to deal with an aggro deck is to stop them from being aggressive, and that's typically a feature of control decks.
Yeah. You can sort of look at Legacy sideboards and stuff like that are great for this. Or the Leyline of Sanctity, I believe. It's the Leyline that gives you hexproof. Is essentially like, it's sort of like a stopping attacks for a burn deck. You know, when the burn deck can't target the player, their whole line of attack has gone away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why.
And going back to planeswalkers.
Oh. Yeah, go ahead.
Now, I was just going to say, using the Elspeth we were talking about earlier, not only does it crank out the 1/1s that can be chump blockers or whatever, but in effect, it gives you extra life, because your opponent has to waste attacks or burn getting rid of it.
Absolutely, yeah.
So Elspeth is 6 mana, get 5 life, get 3 1/1s.
And if it works so efficiently that your opponent just can't deal with it at all, then Elspeth wins the control player of the game by making all the guys and then making them fly and hitting you.
Yeah. We can get into that a little bit more when we talk about other deck types as well.
Yeah. So what we're going to be talking about is broad swipes, I guess, of the paintbrush of Magic. You know, aggressive is it's one of the big ones. You know, and I think any good meta, whether we're talking competitive or we're talking casual, I feel like if there isn't an aggro deck that sort of exists within it, it changes how the meta might play out. I like to be the aggressive guy, and be the one dealing with threats, because it means that, you know, Callum as the control player, you need to be sort of prepared for that. Or Steven, where you play sort of more of a combo-ish kind of control-y, mid-range-y thing,
Wow, I like that. I like that my playstyle is three different deck types. Far
yeah,
out.
Yeah, I know, right? We need some more descriptive terms for these. But yeah, you know what I mean. Like it. I would say it keeps you honest. You know what I mean? It keeps a meta honest. That there's a thing out there that's not necessarily the boogeyman, but it's the cold wind outside that you need to probably have a jacket to prepare for.
Because it's going to hit you in the face.
Yeah, I mean,
for five.
Yeah, you don't go out expecting the cold, and then you're like, oh fuck, I really should have brought a jacket.
You don't go out expecting the Spanish Inquisition, and it just happens.
It just happens. No,
nobody expects
the Spanish
Inquisition amongst our weaponry are such diverse elements as fear. Shout out to Michael Palin.
Shout out to Sarah Palin. I know she's listening.
She can probably see us from her backyard, to be honest. I mean, she can see Russia, right?
We're podcasting in Russia.
Yes, shout out to Comrade Putin.
She can see Russia. She can probably see far enough to see Australia. So.
Yeah.
That's not how that works.
Yes, it is. She didn't misspoke. Like, she didn't misspeak saying that she could see Russia. She just has amazing eyes.
Also eyesight.
Who else are we shouting out to, by the way?
Yeah, so should we move to the outro?
The shout out segment?
Yeah. So, shout out this week to Skype for being a fantastic and useful service that never crashes ever.
Use a fucking piece of shit.
Yep.
Fuck's sake, man.
It was free, man. Calm the hell down.
That doesn't mean it's allowed to be shot.
Audacity is free.
It means you can't complain about it, bro.
Audacity is free, and yeah.
You know what else is free? Malaria.
No, it isn't.
Okay, have you ever gone to a shop and bought malaria?
No, I can't say I have.
I haven't.
Okay. It's free. You just need to know where to look, man.
I'm just not doing it right, apparently.
Okay, yeah. So, shout-outs. Yeah, Skype. Audacity for crashing that one time while I was recording before. And shout-out to MP3 Skype Recorder for sometimes not recording when you're meant to. And shout-out to my computer for needing three restarts to come back after Skype decided to lock me in a call.
And shout outs to your alarm clock.
Yes, shout out to my alarm clock for not happening.
Shout out to Chewy from the Manipool because we almost found your house, bro. Watch it. And thanks to tappedout.net, we tried finding your house and we didn't. So, you're welcome.
For anyone left...
Yeah, shout-outs to TapTap for being creepy.
Yeah, for anyone completely unaware, apparently there's a feature on TapTap that I wasn't aware of. I guess I must have put in my address at some point into my TapTap profile, and it now informs people on my TapTap profile where my house is. So, any listeners of Squirecast, I'm going to beg you, don't heckle me there. That's where my parents live. I'm not there a lot of the time, so...
Yeah. you open your mailbox one day to find out a fan has signed a My Little Pony card and gone for my favorite podcast. Get fucked. Love Portugal.
Love Portugal.
I don't know. I know we have a fan in Portugal, and that's really good. But I get the feeling that. We have more non-fans there than fans, so I get the feeling they'd be the ones sending us.
Yeah,
so there are people in Portugal that know about us and hate us.
No. There are fans and there are non-fans, and non-fans are bad.
Okay, all right, sure.
let's go with that.
Yeah.
Shout out to TK Reaper, the only magic player in Karatha.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to... Or the only guy with his tapped out profile registered in Karatha.
Mm. Oh, yeah, sorry, bro. We found your house on Tapped Out. Sorry.
Congratulations, you're living in the middle of nowhere.
You might want to check that out.
Send us $300 and we won't inform people where you live. I don't know.
I don't know if you could do that. I think that's extortion.
Is that extortion? Is it? Really? No? I think it is. Maybe I should stop. Anyway, you guys got any more shout-outs before we head off?
Yeah, shout-out to Curdape, the only aggro card we should have spoken about but didn't.
Oh, yeah, Curdape.
Oh, there's one I should have spoken about but didn't.
And Wild
Student Master of Warfare.
Oh, I love Student of Warfare. Student of Warfare's so good.
So sexy. It's the only aggro card I'll play.
What does it do?
It's the one drop with level up. It's a 1/1 for a single white. And it levels up to become... Yeah, if we're talking about, like, you know, end game, here you go. Student of Warfare is a great example of that, because it can come down early and be aggressive, or late in the game, level up into something amazing.
What does it level up into?
It's...
So...
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you have the card up, Matt?
I've got the card up, yeah. It's a 1/1 for a single white, and for a single white it levels up, meaning it gets a level counter, and when it gets to level 2, so when it has at least 2 level counters on it, it's a 3/3 with first strike, and when it gets to level 7, it's a 4/4 with double strike.
Wow.
And a 4/4 with double strike is a very useful creature.
So that's mono white, right?
Yep.
I might just make a note on my 19, the Sun deck.
Yeah. Is that a Yu-Gi-Oh reference?
No, Binding of Isaac.
No, 19.
Well, no, no. It's like a reference to the tarot card, the Sun, which is number 19 in the Major Arcana. And what I actually want to do eventually is to build a Vorthos deck, like an EDH deck that is based. You know, the flavor is the 12 or the 12, the
tarot,
multiple
the tarot cards,
Major Arcana, yeah.
You know, you know
those shoutouts to Arcana Force 19, the Sun.
Yeah, back in
it's an anime only card, so no one knows about it.
Mm-hmm.
You say it's more beautiful?
Yes.
Hey, Steven. ballpark idea for the tarot deck: make it a more focused deck, so that it's like you're flipping up the tarot cards. Your fate is the snake. Or, the lovers. My work here is done.
Oh, fuck you, Matt. That was good. No, is that our cold open for this week?
Maybe.
By accident. Your fate is the snake.
We have good times here on Squirecast. It's good news. So I think that brings episode 7, How to Build an Aggro Deck, to a close.
Yeah.
Sound good to everyone? I guess before we sign off, I guess just like the biggest of shout outs, of course, to everyone that listens to Squirecast. I have no idea how many of you there you are, but anyone who does, you're supporting the show, and that's great. So, you know, be sure to tell it to your friends. Leave us a comment on mtgcast.com. Email us at mtgsquirecast@gmail.com, or alternatively, email Teferi at he's trapped in a time bubble@gmail.com, and let us know what you think. Every comment, every hate mail, every dick pic that you send us, it supports the show in some way. You know, next time you've got your friend in a car and there's nothing on the radio, just...
Take a dick pic and send it to us.
No, I'm going somewhere different with that. Next time you have your friend in the car, pop it on the radio, pop it on your iPod.
Have you kidnapped him or something? Next time you've got your friend just tied up in the boot.
Next time you're giving your friend a consensual lift in your car.
An angry handy.
Put Squirecast on the radio, put it on your stereo, and make them listen to it, and maybe they'll become a fan.
Can that be the episode name? An angry handy.
An aggressive handy.
An angry handy. Oh, I just stapled my pants. Oh.
What the? Alright, so, we're gonna have to rush Steven to the emergency room. Here ends episode 7 of Squirecast. Steven is apparently stapling his own pants.
I stapled my pants by accident. I was just playing with the stapler, and I didn't see that there was one staple left, so I stapled my pants.
Did you apparently stop learning as a 5-year-old or something? Oh man, staplers are fun! Ka-chunk, 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 ka-chunk.
Yeah, I learned that lesson when I was in school and I got a staple stuck in my thumb. That hurts like hell.
Oh god, yes it does.
Oh, ow. Yeah.
Because it kind of curves, so you can't just pull it straight out.
Yep.
You've got to kind of finesse it.
Yep.
Finesse, verb.
Finesse is a verb.
Dude.
To remove something with finesse.
No, I mean,
I thought that was an adverb.
You know the classic like cartoon, you know, someone like puts a piece of paper on someone's head and like staples it right to their forehead kind of thing?
I've seen that happen.
I have seen. I remember the group of kids in my high school that just sat and did that for like 10 minutes or something like that. They're just like, ka-ching. Oh man, oh it hurts. Ka-ching. Oh no, and like it's like blood streaming down these pages of paper that are on their head and stuff
man.
Like that.
Did I know these kids?
Yes, you probably did. Did you go to Kinross College? Yeah, you know who I'm talking about.
Similar thing in high school as well, where these guys were competing at lunch to see how many staples they could put in their forearm before the bell went. And they'd turn up with just their arm cut, like, the lunch staple all the way up their arm. And they're going, really hurts!
Jesus. Anyway,
yeah.
the lesson let's take in this episode is that aggro decks are fun. Shout out to kidnapping your friends, giving them an angry handy, and kids in high school are fucking retarded.
Wow, man, yeah.
Anyway, guys, this outro has gone on way too long. I think it's time to end it right here. Here ends Squirecast episode 7. Check us out next time. My name has been Matt.
My name has been Callum.
My name is Bean Steven.
That doesn't even make any sense. Bean Matt? Okay. Anyway.
I don't care what you've been. I want to know what you are now.
My name is Matt.
My name was once Callum. I'm not telling you what it is now.
And my name is Bean Steven.
Alright, guys. Catch you next time on episode 8 of Squirecast.